Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Dynasty Locker Room Podcast Network. I'm here again with Jason today for the second half of our doubleheader. Yesterday, we talked about the NFL offseason and what all these moves mean for your fantasy football season. But today, we're going to dive into the second half and talk about everyone's favorite topic, rookies. And I couldn't think of anyone better to join me today than none other than Jason, the fantasy football correspondent here at the Dynasty Locker Room. Jason, how the heck are you? How are we doing today?
Really good. Really excited to dig into the rookies. Kind of be a little bit of a different tone for us, I think, on these football podcasts where we kind of do more of an overall view. We're going to dive into a lot of specific players and quite a few of them instead of kind of more of a team basis. So I'm looking forward to digging into individuals on a more consistent basis in this one.
Absolutely. We're going to cast the net wide and broad and see what we can come back with. And I guess I didn't put it in our show sheet notes, but I know I have several rookie picks in a couple leagues, did the productive struggle last year and kind of punted a little bit. But what are your teams looking at pick wise?
I am in my league where I'm trying to repeat and claim that Dynasty prize. I actually traded away my first rounder this year, which would have been 10th overall anyway, in a trade that netted me Calvin Ridley last year, which has done nothing and will do nothing this year either. But I was lucky enough to flip a third rounder last year for what turned out to be the 11th overall pick. So I moved back one.
That's not bad.
Not at all. So I still will have 2 seconds. And given the nature of this draft, I think I would rather have that than too much from 5 through 10, you know, as far as picks go.
Absolutely.
And then, in my other league, I actually had just made a trade for Saquon in just for some more depth on my running backs. Obviously, neither of us are very high on him as the Saquon that the name attaches to, but I, you know, as a third or fourth option, I like that. And then I was able to get a little more 2023 draft capital in that by getting rid of a late first rounder in this year's draft and getting me into that very rich 2023 draft.
Heavily coveted.
Yes.
Well, I know next year is definitely a little bit more interesting to talk about, but you got to play for the now. And a lot of people have a lot of picks this year, and there's still some good talent here. But before we dive in too deep, we're going to get into a little housekeeping. Obviously, feel free to check us out at any point at thedynastylockerroom.com. Feel free to swing by the forum, chat with us, the other writers, any other fans. Definitely a good way to stay involved, ask all your hitting questions, and give us suggestions on what you'd like to hear on an upcoming podcast episode. Speaking of the podcast, absolutely subscribe, give us a rating, give us a comment. It's the best way to help us reach listeners like you, if you would be so kind as to do that. And obviously, you can find most of us everywhere on Twitter and Reddit. I'll be at DLR Test Monster. And why don't we get into it? Do you have any reactions from the draft from a non-fantasy standpoint, Jason? What about maybe what some of your favorite teams did?
My favorite team, begrudgingly, being the Vikings. I think I was actually on a flight back to Minnesota that weekend that the draft ended, and there was a guy sitting across the aisle from me, and he said, "Did you hear what happened in the draft?" And I said, "I did." And all he could say was, "I thought Rick Spielman was gone." so to see the Vikings do that typical trade of all those picks and move around and really kind of not accomplish filling those holes that seemed to be needing to be filled felt very reminiscent. So I felt kind of safe with that. Yeah. You know, you don't have to worry about things changing.
It's comforting.
Continuity is comforting. I agree. I think, and we touched on this in yesterday's podcast, what's going on in Green Bay? To trade away Adams and then to make some of the trades they did and move around and draft the receiver where they did and things like that. I know fans of the green and gold are doing their normal screech about not getting enough offensive help for Rodgers, but with, in my mind's eye, with good reason this year.
Yeah.
Very questionable. Honestly, so most of my focus with this focus is in the NFC North and the Bears doing Bears things. It's the same. The Lions, who knows? But it was a very weird NFL draft for the NFC North.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you think about the Vikings not only trading with the Packers back, but trading with the Lions and moving around with both of those teams, that felt very weird, even though it was very Rick Spielman-esque, as you mentioned. I think the most interesting thing for me was, having two premier wide receivers getting traded during the draft, like we talked about yesterday. That doesn't happen every year, and definitely a little wrinkle that we saw this year. And also the number of first-round wide receivers that we saw go, I think that speaks a lot to, the lack of talent at the quarterback position. Only seeing one quarterback go in the first round, that hasn't happened in quite some time as well. So it was a very different draft from that standpoint. And, the Vikings did fill a couple holes, but they didn't fill it at the top of the draft, which I thought they needed to do. So it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. And, yeah, the North is going to be an interesting chase this year with Aaron Rodgers, like we talked about yesterday, having, no marquee weapons. Who's he going to make a marquee weapon? I think that's a question of who and not if.
Yeah.
Well,
I agree.
Why don't we start digging into some of these prospects and talk about what they can do for some fantasy teams out there? And I think it makes sense to start at that quarterback position. Obviously, the bearer of many burdens in the NFL. We saw Malik Willis. I think everybody's got him on their radar as the top quarterback this year, landing in Tennessee, sitting behind Ryan Tannehill. What are you seeing here?
Yeah, obviously, and anybody who has access to any sports talk has seen that Mr. Tannehill has no interest in mentoring him. Take that for what you will. I mean, put anybody in those same shoes, and I think we'd all say the same thing. I'm not going to help somebody take over my own job.
Yeah.
But, I don't totally know what to make of him, just being that he was so highly touted coming in. His draft stock took a hit, going in the third round. If you look into it, there's not, outside of Russell Wilson, not a lot of third round pedigree for quarterback success. I look at a guy like Willis, not overly big bodied, good runner with the football. The intangibles are there and everything like that, but he certainly doesn't have a clear path to playing time right now, unless Tannehill lets the demons from last playoffs continue to sit in his head, which I read an article on how he said that pretty much, I think, for almost a month's worth, he couldn't sleep because all he could think about was that game. So if that carries in, I mean, the mental side to football is a very real thing. If that carries in, who knows? Maybe he struggles and they give Willis a shot. As far as drafting him in the dynasty draft, I wouldn't really be interested in going after him much before late third round and just taking a flyer on him based on the other quarterbacks that are available in this draft personally.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting situation we're talking about here. I mean, obviously there's upside. I think we've seen a huge trend, obviously, in dynasty, fantasy, whatever, over the last couple of years where the running quarterback has really evolved the position. And it certainly can be a game breaker, especially if you're not an extremely talented passer. And that's what I worry about here with Malik Willis. My ultimate fear is Jalen Hurts. Like, he's gonna see one read. He's going to take off, and there's not a long lifespan for quarterbacks like that in the NFL, regardless of their fantasy output. So I think the ceiling is fairly high in fantasy, especially if he can not become that Jalen Hurts type. If we can see him evolve into even a Lamar Jackson type quarterback, that there's absolutely a future for him in fantasy. And I think I would take him, in the back half of a second round, in a one quarterback league, certainly, where I could see that being a thing. But as you mentioned, when is that playing time going to come? If Ryan Tannehill's not going to take him under his wing, what's he going to learn? So I think it's kind of a oddball situation where you know, he's got a quarterback in front of him that doesn't want him there, isn't going to mentor him. So he's going to have to do a lot of learning by watching, by talking to the quarterback coach, the offensive coordinator, and really making the most out of those, you know, secondhand snaps, making a lot of that preseason. So I don't know what to make of it, but I do know that the ceiling's high. So take that for what you will. And I think the next guy to talk about is obviously the consensus guy that people think will start this year. Kenny Pickett goes from the University of Pittsburgh and lands in a pretty good landing spot in Pittsburgh. The question here is, I think, how soon do we see him supplant Mitchell Trubisky? Because I don't think anyone sees him as a viable long-term starter. What do you see here? What do you see with the weapons there? And can this be a productive year one?
I do. I do think this can be a productive year one. I do not see Trubisky holding. Honestly, I don't really even see him taking the job week one. Who knows? Yeah. You know, maybe they want to give 2 or 3 weeks, let Pickett, you know, past training camp to let him get his feet under him. Mm-hmm. But my mind's eye tells me this is his team. You know, I think he's got a great offensive system. I really like Tomlin just as a coach overall. So I think that's good. And he's got the weapons to help. Freiermuth looked really good last year as a potential, you know, guy to keep improving upon what he had. Najee is Najee. He's a huge piece. You've got Deontay, you've got Claypool. You've got these established pieces. You know, one of the things talked about last year was the offensive line. You know, they didn't address it at all in the draft. However, you know, it's another year where that line has had a chance to play together, which, you know, are they great? No, but does another year of continuity help as far as offensive line goes? Yes, I think, in my opinion, that does help. And so if he can be mobile enough, find those dump offs and things and just kind of get a feel for the NFL, I think he could have a pretty solid year.
Yeah, I think when you're looking at the grand scheme, if you're looking for a guy who can, especially in a 2QB league, I mean, if you're looking for a day one starter, this guy has the ultimate high upside potential wise. And you talked a little bit about those weapons. I mean, obviously, when you get to throw to Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool and a pair of rookie wide receivers, I think there's no shortage of weapons when you factor in Freiermuth, like you said. The biggest question for me is that offensive line. And you know, another year of playing together is one thing, but, you know, you saw Ben Roethlisberger get the least time in the NFL last year and what that did to his, you know, length of passes down the field. So I wonder if that's going to be a factor or how much he's going to get hit. I think that's the biggest thing I think about. I don't think it's if he sees the field. I think it's whether he has the mobility to either A, escape the pocket and be able to buy time that Ben Roethlisberger couldn't, or if he's going to get hit and it's going to be a David Carr like rookie year that we saw with the Houston Texans in 2001. Is that a factor in your mind at all?
It definitely is. And I think a young guy getting knocked around is a concern long-term. As we've seen, granted Ponder wasn't that good, but we saw that right away. And then he got happy feet after his first start. So I mean, that's definitely something that's front of mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are worse situations out there. And when you look at the quality of pass catchers Pittsburgh has, they're pretty high on the list. And when you flip the script and look at Atlanta, where Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati wound up, what do you make of that situation? Is this a situation you like at all?
It is not from a Ridder perspective. It is not a situation that I like. One being, I think my affection for Mariota is documented on the DLR.
Yes.
So I'm excited to see him have a second chance here. I really hope he plays well. Until he proves that he really cannot play, I just don't see Ridder having a chance at seeing the field at all. And if Mariota plays well, and you know, why would you get rid of him? Maybe he's the guy for the next 2 or 3 years. Who knows? So from that standpoint, I'm not in love with it. I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Ridder. but he's inaccurate. So it's kind of one of his biggest knocks. And I think unless there's an injury or Mariota really just is no longer and shouldn't be playing, I don't see him getting any consistent playing time, possibly for the next season or two.
Well, I'll talk you through my thought process here, and here we go. So Desmond Ridder, obviously a third-round pick, so there's not a huge investment there. Obviously, they spent some money on Mariota, who's already, you know, ready. We saw him have some level of success over the last handful of years as a backup, and he was even moderately successful at one point as a quarterback for the Titans. Here's where my thought process comes in, though. We saw Atlanta pick pretty highly in the draft the last 2 years. We don't expect them to be good this year. So here's your conundrum. You're going to see Mariota start the season. If it doesn't go well for Mariota, Ridder might get some time, but if they don't win games, they're going to have to spend a pick pretty highly in the draft on the quarterback, because if you look at next year's draft class, it is incrementally, exponentially better than this draft class. I mean, you're going to see 4, 5, 6 names in the first round of the draft next year at the quarterback position, and I fully expect Atlanta to be one of them, and Ridder's going to be a casualty of that, I think. So if they play well, Mariota's going to stay on the field, and if they don't, I don't think Ridder stands much chance at staving off any competition between who they draft in the first round next year. Does that make sense to you?
That makes complete sense. And I think even just bolstering that point more is the fact that outside of Pitts, there really isn't any weaponry that if Ridder got in to show that he has anything, that would stave off a pick. But yeah, like with the pedigree coming in next year, I completely agree that it's just, there's nothing that makes me want to take Ridder.
Yeah, and we'll talk about, you know, Drake London and what that means for him coming up. But, you know, between Pitts and, you know, Cordero Patterson, they just don't have a ton else there. I mean, we saw him land Brian Edwards from the Raiders, but what has he done on a consistent basis over the last couple of years? So, and why don't we swing it over to a division rival next? We saw Matt Corral end up with the Carolina Panthers. Does this do anything for you?
Nothing in Carolina does much for me, to be perfectly honest. I think he, to me, of the quarterbacks we've talked about, has more of a clear-cut path to starting behind outside of Kenny Pickett. If I'm trying to be flashy here, he's one of my dark horses to make some fantasy waves this year, just because obviously Darnold has been, you know, shown no love, bad, and just shown that they don't have faith in him in Carolina, nor should they. And, you know, he's not a huge guy, but he uses his size well. He can move, which is more than Darnold can say. Pretty accurate passer. You know, Carolina is obviously not a great team, but I could see him finding his way into starting. Now, what does that mean? You know, probably something in the low to mid 20s, you know, maybe a notch better than what Trevor Lawrence was last year. Kind of in that. But as far as these four guys, I'd say he's the second most likely to make some fantasy impact this season.
Yeah, I would say at the beginning of the draft process, he was probably my favorite quarterback, if only because he was rather efficient over his last 2 years at Ole Miss. And you saw him toss for almost 70% over the last 2 years. So that does a lot for me. You can't say the same of guys like Malik Willis, being able to efficiently complete passes along with a 20-5 touchdown interception ratio. I think that says a lot about how prepared you are for the NFL. When I look at the options there, I mean, obviously you've got McCaffrey, who, if he's on the field, you know, he's going to be the ultimate check down guy for him. And then you've got DJ Moore there, which is a lot more than Atlanta can say. So I think there are some options there for him to target if he gets in the game. Obviously, I think we see Sam Darnold start week one, but with how quickly the season collapsed for him last year, I just wonder what's left there in the tank at all.
Yeah, I don't think there's much.
Well, I think we've said all that needs to be said about a weak quarterback class. why don't we switch gears a little bit and jump into some of these running backs? And I think the guy that's going to be at top a lot of the draft boards this year is none other than Breece Hall, who ends up with the New York Jets. What do you make of this situation?
I think it at least early on is reminiscent of what's going on in Denver.
Sure.
You know, obviously I don't have the pedigree of a guy with 4 or 5 years plus experience that Gordon does, but you know, Carter didn't perform poorly last year on a bad team, but he didn't wow either. This definitely, if I'm a Carter owner, this spells nothing but concern for me.
Yeah.
To take, is, you know, how I look, and I know you're the same way, how you look at a pick for a running back going in the second, fourth overall is almost like going mid in the first round, just because the second round is the new first round. So that is an extremely high pick. When last year we were talking about Carter being the guy, clearly he's not. I like Breece coming in. We've talked about him in prior podcasts, even well before the draft. So, I mean, I got to think this is his backfield to take. But yeah. I think it definitely starts out as a Denver-like situation.
Yeah, I think ultimately what I see here, and this is coming from a Carter owner, I think this is Breece's backfield, and we're going to see Carter develop into kind of the role that he had when he was in college, when he shared a backfield with Javonte Williams. You know, Javonte took the brunt of the load, and Carter was more of the flexy, pass-catching kind of back, scat back, third down back. So I think ultimately that's the situation we're going to see here. You know, in running situations, Hall is going to be the guy on the field. And when they need to move the ball, Carter's going to be the guy out there to catch some passes. And Breece is an accomplished pass catcher as well, but you also have to spell your lead runner a little bit. So ultimately, I think this means flex appeal at best for Carter. And this potentially means a pretty big workload for Breece Hall. The biggest question mark, obviously, is how well the Jets are going to be able to stretch the field in order to keep Breece from facing 8-man fronts. I think that's the biggest question here.
Well, I've got nothing but full confidence in Zach to do that. So,
are you serious?
No, not even a little bit. Not a chance, Lance.
Well, another big name that we talked about coming out as potential top two pick here was Kenneth Walker. And he kind of landed in a loaded backfield in Seattle. Does this spell doom and gloom for Carson and Rashad Penny?
I kind of think it does. I actually really like him. And the only thing that gives me pause, but also if I may talk out of both sides of my mouth, if you'll allow it.
I think they will.
The fact that they have no quarterback scares me, but the fact that that same quarterback was in Denver last year and they ran a lot, you know, so you can talk on either side of it. But for me, it kind of spells the end of Chris Carson. He's been oft injured the last 2 years. Yeah. And we saw Penny start to take over after, you know, several other backs had a chance. Penny looked really good those last 3 to 5 weeks. So I really think that Carson at his age and stage in his career likely fades to the background. I'm pretty high on Walker. Again, here, you know, we just talked about the pick. It's a pretty high pick on a running back when you have two guys in-house already. So I got to think it's Penny and Walker, with Walker having a real chance to take over this backfield.
Yeah. So the running back landing spots at the top of the draft were perhaps the most perplexing to me, if only because Michael Carter was reasonably good last year, and Seattle just re-signed Rashad Penny to a 1-year, $5.75 million deal. So I don't know exactly what to make out of that. Obviously, you know, Rashad Penny's no spring chicken. You know, 26 is pretty old for a running back in the NFL already. It just brings the question of, okay, if this is the end for Carson, it's certainly a 2-man backfield at least. And with them paying Rashad Penny a decent amount, a pretty penny, if you will, I don't see any way that they let a $5 million guy sit on the bench. So I wonder what this split is going to look like. And this ultimately, to me, I think looks more like a Denver-esque backfield than I think we saw in the New York Jets. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, and I think we can agree on that Carson really seems to be the odd man out here. I just, I don't see a way you can make a three-headed monster work. And why on earth would you spend the $5 million on Penny and that high of a pick on a running back if you're not going to use them?
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. Ultimately, like you said, with a lack of quarterback play there, despite their talent, maybe at wide receiver with Lockett and oh god, I'm blanking.
Okay.
DK Metcalf, yes. Between the talent there, it's not the shortage there. It's going to be the fact that there's no quarterback play. So I think they're not going to have much choice but to run the ball. So I think there's going to be a decent workload for both of these guys. I just worry that it pushes both of them into that RB2 territory.
Yeah, I definitely think it does. I don't think you can expect any high-end production from a fantasy perspective out of either of them.
Right. And when we look at bad landing spots and good landing spots, definitely a guy who took a jump up a lot of draft boards, I think, by landing in Houston, as opposed to some of the guys we've already mentioned. Damian Pierce from the University of Florida landing in Houston. Obviously, they signed Marlon Mack, but does that even matter?
No, I don't think it does. Not that Jonathan Taylor didn't light the world on fire last year, but it also took Indy time both last year and the prior year to really give Taylor that heavy workload where they kind of kept moving stuff around and yeah. Mack was still the odd man out. So I think he's fine, but I don't think he's not that figurehead in Houston. And yeah, this is a great spot for him to land. You know, Davis Mills showed some potential to be a decent quarterback, not great, but good enough to make an offense function. So why not feed him the rock and see what happens?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we're still talking about a very fledgling rebuilding offense here, and to be the young workhorse there. I mean, like we said, there's Marlon Mack, there's Rex Burkhead, but neither of them have done anything in quite some time, at least for fantasy purposes. And I do think there's at least some potential in Davis Mills, which is not what I expected to say at this point last year when he got drafted in the third round, but third round pick last year looks a hell of a lot better than a third round pick this year, at least I'll say. So there's some upside there. And obviously they still have Brandon Cooks. They've got Nico Collins, just spent a draft pick on John Metchie out of Alabama. So they've got some weapons. If Davis Mills can push the ball and, you know, we can see Pierce at least used in that three down role, I think there's a lot of upside here. And he could be the dark horse, I think, as far as rookies go this year, as far as upside potential and not splitting a backfield goes. And when we look a little bit further east in the AFC, James Cook, Dalvin's brother, got a lot of draft capital from Buffalo when they took him in the second round. Do we see an end here for Zach Moss and Devin Singletary? Can James Cook actually be a true third down back, or are we looking at a pass catcher?
So I think it spells the end for Moss, but I'm not so sure about Singletary. I think, you know, you looked at both of them in the past couple of years and, they were kind of each given a chance and just nobody ever got that foothold. And then you see Moss get healthy scratched, or, you know, at the very least benched a handful of times last year. And Singletary looked really good. I mean, let me rephrase that. Looked good the last handful of weeks of the fantasy season. Now, does that mean that he's got a total role carved out with this draft pick? Not necessarily, but yeah, again, you know, you're looking at a high draft pick on a running back. So there's plans for Cook, but I think a la Chris Carson, Zach Moss is the odd man out here. Does he become a three down guy? I don't know. I think they like Singletary enough that they maybe split it a little bit, but ultimately I could see Cook being the more major workhorse just because they know what they have in Moss and Singletary and they still went for another running back.
Yeah, that's fair. I think when I look at the situation, obviously, I think you're right about Zach Moss. I think that writing was on the wall when they brought in Duke Johnson before the draft. Definitely a more noted, toted pass catcher in the NFL. So I think that spells the end there. Duke Johnson, I expect to fill more of a complimentary role, though, than anything else. Ultimately, I think you're probably right about Singletary. I think he's going to see certainly a lot more of the work between the tackles. Cook isn't certainly noted for his size, but definitely more speedy. We saw him in a lot of pass catching and kick return situations at the University of Georgia. So I think that's ultimately what we see early on in the season. And he could certainly work his way into more roles running the football as the season progresses. But I think there's a lot of upside here, especially for PPR. The way the Bills seem to move the offense, Josh Allen doing a lot of the running himself. I think with the spread option that they tend to run, there's going to be a lot of room to work until they get up by a huge margin.
Yeah, I like that.
And we talked yesterday, obviously, about Leonard Fournette coming back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They went after Rashad White in the draft out of Arizona State. What, if anything, can we make of this? Is he the new Ronald Jones, hopefully minus the fumble problems?
I think he has to be. Again, you know, third-round pick, but still a high pick on a running back for a team that is pretty rich on the offensive side of the ball and with some expensive players. So, you know, you could spread that draft capital around and fill some other holes and get depth elsewhere, especially with the other backs that they have on the team. I believe they still have Vaughn and then Gio. Yep. So to go out and draft him, I think there's a role for him. I think he's the Ronald Jones. Hopefully sans fumbles. And I think he cuts, and we talked about it yesterday too, I think he cuts into Fournette's workload. I still think Fournette, while maybe not the exact same season like I was so bullish on in the initial conversation that he had last year, but I still think he's by far, you know, as close to a workhorse as the modern NFL allows, yeah. with White getting the scraps that are left.
Yeah, I think ultimately you're right. We saw Keyshawn Vaughn be pretty good for stretches last year with Fournette and Ronald Jones not seeing the field. And I think there's enough there where I just wonder, at least in year one, how much of the field he's actually going to see. I think he's going to be eased in more or less, especially with Fournette being a pretty accomplished pass catcher in his own right. I think he's going to be on the field in those situations. So I think how much of the field he sees comes down to the effectiveness of Vaughn when he's spelling Fournette on early downs. And if we don't see that early in the season, I think there's room for him to work his way up the pecking order. But for right now, I see him as an RB3 on the depth chart, at least until, you know, some things shake out in free agency with Vaughn leaving, where he can carve out a true number two role for himself, unfortunately. Where do you draft a guy like this? I guess we haven't had a ton of conversations about that yet, about these running backs, if only because, you know, they're obviously some of the ones who are going to be higher on the draft board. But where do you rate a guy who you don't see having a lot of playing time in year one?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, especially because we've dedicated some conversations in the past to, you know, taking flyers on running backs late. This is one of those guys, you know, one guy that we had mentioned previously in prior conversations was the back out of San Fran last year that amazed everyone, Elijah Mitchell, that no one, for the most part, went undrafted in a lot of leagues, in a lot of dynasty leagues. Is White that kind of guy? No. So my point in bringing that up is I would potentially look at him as more of like a Mr. Irrelevant pick. I'd be okay with even not drafting him and seeing if I could get him, you know, let a few weeks go by. Obviously, it all depends on what your rookie draft structure is for your league. Mm-hmm. If you have space, then yeah, I'd throw a fourth round pick at him. But seeing as, because I agree, I mean, I don't think there's a clear-cut path for substantial playing time early on, and there could be a roadblock for the entire year one. I think there's other guys with more this year upside, so it depends on where you are, too. If you really see some potential with him, you know, who knows where Fournette really ends up in a year. You could maybe argue a late third-round pick, depending on what picks you have left. You know, it's not a great draft, you know, target a guy. But personally, I'm looking tail end of the fourth, leave him undrafted, and if I get the itch, go after and pick him up in waivers.
Yeah, I mean, speaking to your point, we've talked a lot about taking some flyers on some of these running backs late, especially with the lack of options. And if for no other reason, I could see him being a flyer in the third, if only because if Fournette goes down with any kind of an injury, which we saw a whole lot of in the NFL last year, it opens up the door to a whole lot of playing time. So I could see from my standpoint an investment there, just to have an insurance policy if you are a Fournette owner, or certainly, if you're not, it could certainly be a way to build some depth at the position, especially if Fournette's out for any kind of time.
Yeah. And if I'm a Fournette owner and I don't have Vaughn, I would absolutely take him at some point in the draft.
Yeah, definitely worth the capital there, if nothing else, than to have a nice handcuff for yourself, especially if you've got space on your roster.
Yep.
And speaking of handcuffs, we saw Isaiah Spiller take a huge draft day tumble, and he winds up with the LA Chargers to back up Austin Eckler. What do you make of this? Is this actually a better landing spot than it looks with Eckler's injury history?
100%. We've talked before too. I like Spiller. I've never been able to buy in on Eckler as the top five back that he's been touted as the last couple of years. Obviously, when healthy, he puts up numbers. He's young enough, but the injury history is there. And granted, different regime, but the Chargers have shown a propensity to go with a couple running backs. So with the pedigree that he's coming in with, and at the very least to spell Eckler maybe a little more frequently than other lead backs, I like that. Absolute must have handcuff if you've got Eckler. That's no doubt. Like I think you consider taking him depending where you're at, even early in the second round. If I'm an Eckler owner, but other than that, he's probably more of a flyer if you don't have Eckler, just because there isn't that clear cut path. But I like him. I mean, I definitely, if you have the ability, I would take a chance on him.
Yeah, there's definitely some intrigue for me here. And we've talked already about Eckler's health, but he's also not exactly the youngest running back in the league either. So I wonder how many seasons there are left. And obviously we haven't seen anything, I'll call it productive, from Joshua Kelly or Larry Roundtree to date, where I think he's easily the number two on this depth chart, which is a lot better than we can say of Rashad White. There's definitely going to be some opportunity for some playing time with Eckler's injury history. We know he's not going to be taking every snap already as it is. So there's some upside here to be had. A lot of that for this year, at least, is dependent on the health of Eckler and how much they try and keep him healthy. So there's upside here. And as one of the youngest players in the league, obviously he's only going to grow. Well, we know he underwhelmed at the combine, but we also know the combine doesn't tell you everything you need to know about a player. And we saw Spiller be fairly effective in the Big 12 last year. So definitely a guy I would look to make an investment in somewhere, you know, in the middle of the second, maybe early third. There's going to be a lot of wide receivers and running backs I would take ahead of him, but the upside is here, no doubt.
Yep.
And moving on down the list, we'll head back to Atlanta. Mr. Tyler Allgeier from BYU lands there. Can the Falcons utilize him? Are they going to let Patterson catch balls? Obviously, we know they don't have a ton of options at wide receiver. What do you see here?
Yeah, at bare minimum, this is another guy that I would want, at least mid to late drafts, if I have that ability to just kind of another flyer guy. If you're not targeting somebody specific, look no further than the fact that, and we've talked about it too, how Jekyll and Hyde Patterson was last season. That first half of the year was a world beater. And then, you know, even though he was had that pass catching role, and that was really where all of his production was coming up from in that last half. Yeah. And it's night and day. So I got to think that there's the chance for some significant volume. Now, what does he do with that volume? I'm not a great team, tough to say, but in fantasy, what regardless of the position, volume is king. And there's absolutely the chance for some significant volume there between the tackles.
Yeah, I think you're right. And ultimately, I think they need a compliment to Patterson because we've seen him be at least ineffective when he sees a large workload out of the backfield, certainly between the tackles. So I think they'll probably look to optimize his skill set a little bit more this season. And I think that does open a role for Algier. What kind of workload that is, it's hard to say right now. We know they did bring in Damian Williams, but obviously he wasn't a world beater last year for Chicago either, as he lost a lot of time down the stretch to David Montgomery, certainly the beater there. And he lost time to another rookie last year. So definitely not a guy I'm worried about him trying to pass on the depth chart. I just wonder how much he's going to see. We certainly expect the Falcons to be trailing in a vast majority of games. So what does that look like from a workload standpoint? I don't know, but I think with opportunity does come production, as Tyler of the Dynasty Locker Room likes to say. So he's worth a flyer, certainly, probably somewhere at the back of second, maybe in the third round. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's exactly where I've got him. And flyer being the operative term there. Certainly worth being drafted, but like you said, I don't think you can necessarily target him early, but if he's sitting there and there really isn't anything else jumping out at you, it's worth a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And why don't we move it on over to the Vegas Raiders? We talked a lot about them yesterday, acquiring Davante Adams and what that offense could look like this year, but we saw them draft Zamir White. What do you make of this? Obviously, we saw them decline the option on Jacobs in the offseason. So he's playing on a one-year deal right now. Do you think this could be the ultimate two-year long play?
I think it is. One thing I have to catch myself on is being, you know, as the negative guy in the Dynasty locker room, is being too positive on all these running backs just because there's a clear path to some potential playing time, at least, you know, not significant for all of them, but yeah, there's a path and there's a reason that we're talking about these guys, because they are drafted in a position to teams that need something, right?
Yes.
With that said, Jacobs really hasn't done anything other than grind his way to being a low end RB2 to mid to high end RB3, which isn't great, which is, I think, why the marriage in Vegas is heading to that annulment chapel right next to the Elvis chapel right next door. So I definitely think the intent is for him to be gone at some point here and for White to have a chance. I don't know how I feel about White, to be honest with you. Is he the answer? I'm not sold, but again, like we talked about with Tyler just before, with there's opportunity there. There's definitely potential chance for volume down the road.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make. And, you know, when you think about next year sure is an awful long way away. And we've already talked about how great that next rookie class is, where you could be hanging onto the bag when they draft a running back early next year. So that's definitely not out of the question either. There's definitely upside, and Jacobs isn't without injury issues of his own. So if nothing else, you know, you can count on that for a potential insurance policy this year. We saw it's a brand new coaching staff, so it remains to be seen how they run this offense. And I don't know if they're going to continue to pound the ball on the ground like they have in the past, especially with some of the weapons they have now. So what that workload even looks like if he's the starting back next year, I think, is in question as well.
Definitely.
And when we're talking, I mean, you can't talk about injury issues without talking about Antonio Gibson. And Brian Robinson from Alabama is another guy who got drafted in a pretty decent spot. Obviously, they've got some running backs there in Washington as well. But what do you think about this for a landing spot with all the changes they're making at quarterback?
Yeah, we've gone in on our Wentz talks. This is another handcuff deal where, if you're a Gibson owner, I would say this is a must-have. I don't think that I've seen enough out of anybody else in that backfield to not think that, again, you know, spending the pick that they did on a running back
is anything other than him to be the second guy in line. And you can, you know, and I'm going against what I said yesterday, but you can pretty much chalk up Gibson to missing some time this year. So this is a guy where I definitely have more interest, kind of like a few of these others. I have much more interest if I am a Gibson owner than if I'm not. Largely too, because that Washington offense doesn't do a whole lot for me. You know, they're
not a Wentz guy.
What's that?
You're not a Wentz guy?
Not a huge Wentz guy. certainly not from a fantasy perspective. As a dude, I'm sure he's great. But yeah, that offense to me is just kind of anemic, to be honest.
Yeah, I think what you said has a lot of merit, and if only because when we saw Gibson hurt last year, they were reluctant to use either Jarrett Patterson, who was kind of more of a between the tackles guy, or J.D. McKissic, who's obviously a much more accomplished pass catcher, reluctant to use either of them in the run game very heavily. So I think by spending draft capital on Robinson says a lot about what their intentions are and trying to get an insurance policy there. If Gibson finally has a healthy season, I don't know that Robinson has any value at all this year, but that's a lot to chalk up to for a guy who hasn't been able to do that yet in his career. So there's definitely upside. I just question if you're looking for immediate dividends, this probably isn't your guy. You're waiting for a chip, a chair, and a chance. And you know, we all know that those don't come around every day. I mean, there were a handful of running backs that didn't get hurt last year, and this could absolutely be Gibson's year. So definitely holding a lot of hope there if Robinson's your answer this year at running back.
I agree. Yeah. Unless you're an owner, I'd probably let him slide.
Right. Well, we've talked enough about these running backs, and you know, while we talked about some of this upside, there's definitely a lot more question marks there, and definitely not a theme we've seen in other draft classes. So I think that says a lot about this class, and outside of Hall and Walker, there's just a lot of question marks. Would you say that's fair to say?
It's extremely fair to say.
Well, I know we both have a ton more confidence in some of these wide receivers and their landing spots. Why don't we venture there next? And a name that we talked about yesterday, Jameson Williams landing in Detroit, fresh off that ACL injury. We don't know how much playing time he's going to see this year, but do you think he could be a viable 1-2 punch with the Sun God there?
I definitely think he can. And like we had said, Chark does nothing for me. He's a placeholder until Williams can really grab that number two role. And dare I say, make Detroit football exciting.
Well, you can dare to say that all you want, but I'll believe it when I see it, I think. With Jared Goff at the helm, I just don't know how much confidence I can have, even though he did look, we'll say, passable at getting the ball spread around a little bit last year. Ultimately, I think they're a quarterback away from making this duo one of the better ones in the NFL, and I don't have any qualms about saying that. Williams definitely has some upside, and before that ACL injury, I think we would have called him the hands down number one guy this year as far as rookie wide receivers go, but I think there's a cluster of them now with the questionable health of that ACL. I did just see that he's potentially going to make a debut at the end of September, early October, so it might not be as long of a wait as we once thought. If you're expecting him to debut at the beginning of the season, it sounds like that's out the window though. So take that into consideration when you're drafting him. Definitely a guy I would be looking to target in the early to middle first round, though, just based on the upside alone. What do you think about that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and if you're lucky enough, you have – like obviously you can't take him in the very top half of the first round, but if you're in a draft where you're lucky enough that ACL scares somebody off enough that you can grab him in the second, well – you just got yourself two first-round picks.
Yes, absolutely. Definitely a guy who you could look to pay some dividends down the stretch next year if somebody's afraid of that injury. I'm not, so I'm going to be swooping in certainly probably earlier than a lot of my counterparts. So definitely a guy I'll be looking to target with some later picks. We've talked a lot about Atlanta already. Obviously, they've taken a quarterback, taking a running back, but they also spent a pretty high draft pick on Drake London. We know Atlanta's not returning Calvin Ridley this year due to suspension and some off the field problems last year. With the lack of pass catchers here, we obviously talked a lot about Pitts and Patterson. Do you see a fair amount of volume here for Drake London, or are the problems at quarterback going to be enough to scare you away from early draft capital?
Not necessarily. I think this is a guy who is going to have volume. I like Pitts' ability to take some heat, you know, take some attention, and Patterson's involvement. You know, again, like I've said, Atlanta's offense is nothing to scream about, but adding in a piece like this and Mariota is serviceable enough. I think he can distribute the ball. Is he going to be a world beater? Probably not. But like you had made mention, how long term is he the answer there? Him or Ridder, we could be having a different conversation 12 months from now where the new quarterback just got drafted. So I definitely like the upside, and it's 100% his lead role already.
Yeah, I think the biggest question for me comes from, obviously he's a possession guy. There were questions about his ability to separate, even if he could make some of the best contested catches in college football. Whether he can separate at the NFL level, I think, is the biggest question mark I have. And that might be enough for me to drop him. I think we've seen a trend with these guys who lead the NCAA in contested catches be unable to translate that. So I have questions about that. But when you're the A1 steak sauce at the position, I don't think they're going to have any choice but to try and get him open. So whether they try and run routes that are more conducive to his style and let some of the other speedier wide receivers take those deeper routes, that's fine by me. I mean, especially in a PPR league, I will take, eight catches for 60 yards most days of the week. So I think there's upside there alone. Question I think is going to be whether they have a quarterback this year or next year that can do that for them. And if they're, behind like we expect them to be, I think there's going to be at least volume there for them. So I think there's year one upside and longer. I just question whether he's going to be the A1 in this draft class because of some of those question marks.
Yeah, no, and I don't think he is. I definitely don't think he's the number one in this draft class, despite being drafted as the first receiver. But I think just what you said, what potential he has just for a role, I can't let him slide past the middle of the second round in a draft.
No. How many wide receivers in this class would you rate ahead of him? If he's not our number one, who do you got ahead of him? Where do you rank him?
I probably have him, quite honestly, I probably have him second or third. Okay. I really like Jameson Williams, to be honest. Just long term, and like you said, with once they get a quarterback in there, I really do like that. So I would probably go Jameson. So in the order we've talked, probably Jameson first, and then with him going second.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think ultimately I teeter back and forth. I ultimately third is probably about right for me in the pecking order. If only because I think Treylon Burks, who we'll talk about in a little bit, has more immediate upside based on his skill set and the role he's inheriting from A.J. Brown. Well, we'll talk about that, but I think you're about right. And early to middle of first round, that's where he's going to go. And, the opportunity's there. So definitely worth the draft capital, regardless of what you think that ceiling is. He's going to have the opportunity at least. And we'll dive right on down the list. Another wide receiver taken very highly. We've talked about the Jets and their question marks at the quarterback position. Does adding Garrett Wilson add any question marks to Elijah Moore owners, or can that be a happy marriage for two wide receivers?
I think it leans more to a happy marriage. I think Corey Davis is going to fade just because we know who he is and what. Yeah, exactly. He's shown who he is and what he does and doesn't do. So I think it can be a happy marriage. I mean, Moore was fine. Obviously, Zach Wilson is the issue here. But Garrett Wilson's a good route runner. And I really think that there can be some ham and eggs with him and Moore.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. And, you know, I kind of drew an analogy. I think you're spot on. One of them's definitely a more accomplished route runner, and one of them is definitely a burner. And I could see like a Wayne Krabet, Santana Moss. Does that do anything for you from New York Jets? I'm not super familiar with their history, but that sounds about right, a burner and a possession receiver.
Yeah, nor should you be familiar with their history. But I like that a lot. I think that's good.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think both of their production is tied to the production of that quarterback position. And if Wilson can even take a little bit of a step forward this year, which I expect him to at least a little bit. He certainly can't be as bad as last year. So I think there's upside there. And we talked yesterday that tight end position, while they've got Uzoma and Conklin, like there's nothing there to write home about. So it's these two wide receivers and the check down to Carter or Breece Hall. I mean, Corey Davis is nice, but he's not taking playing time away from either first round wide receiver. So I think there's definitely upside here. And ultimately, I think Garrett Wilson is that number two wide receiver for me ahead of Drake London, if only because we've seen him be that good route runner, good hands, and still has speed. So I think there's a nice skill set there where he can make that work, and definitely a guy I'll be looking to target in the early half of the first round.
And I do want to say, and it pains me to agree with you, I my notes were wrong. I actually did have Garrett Wilson as my number two and Drake as my three.
That's a convenient revision.
It is, but it is a fact. It's a painful mea culpa, but it is a fact.
Well, it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't harass you a little bit.
Right.
Well, we already alluded to Treylon Burks inheriting a very large pair of shoes vacated by AJ Brown. And you can say what you like about the injury questions about A.J. Brown, but you can't deny the production that was there last year when he was on the field. So is this something that you expect to see a very raw wide receiver pick up the mantle and run with it?
I you got to think there's a good chance for it, because with Robert Woods there, again, it's not like he's, you know, he's coming from his own ACL injury and is a little bit long in the tooth, but he's a good receiver. I like the fact that he's not on his own. You know, he's not on an island needing to make all the plays on his own, behalf. He's got Derrick Henry. Tannehill's shown the ability to move the ball around. You know, this is a very good football team.
You're already saying it's not Malik Willis?
I am already saying that. I think that he... I think Tennessee is a very good football team that can support this rookie coming in and kind of fill in those shoes. To the same extent, there's no way that he's going to come in and be A.J. Brown, obviously, but I definitely...
Nor should he be expected to.
No. But there's some tremendous upside.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Ultimately, this is definitely Tannehill's team all year. Unless something unforeseen happens, this is his team to run with. Obviously, we expect them to be a playoff contender again. And when you're running out Tannehill and Derrick Henry, there's no reason to expect it not to be. I think with Robert Woods aside of him and questionable for week one, there's definitely potential there. The only other pass catcher that they've brought in is Austin Hooper. And we've seen him be productive, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him be an upside play for this year, certainly as a potential red zone target. But Burks is ultimately one of the most raw players we've seen in a long time. Definitely high-end speed, high-end athleticism. And if he can get open, if he's reeling in passes, this is definitely a guy I want and definitely deserves certainly first half consideration, even if you like other wide receivers better, if only because of the volume, A, and B, because he has the potential to get better. I mean, we're talking about a guy who didn't play a ton of football before college, and he turned into one of the best wide receivers in the SEC. So there's a lot to take away from that, especially when you can hold your own against the Alabamas and Georgias of the world. Tells a lot to me, even if you're not the most precise route runner and don't have the best hands, there's a lot of room to grow here, I think.
Yep.
And what, well, we talked about what Green Bay is doing. Next guy I've got up for us to discuss is none other than Christian Watson from North Dakota State. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Do you think he has a realistic shot to be the A1 in the absence of Davante Adams?
I do, probably more out of necessity than, you know, what skill set would truly allow for on a normal team in a normal situation. I've seen comparisons to Scantling for him, and Scantling as his floor. I don't know how much I buy into that one way or the other. But I think you look at a guy in Rodgers who historically doesn't like to throw to rookies, but is going to have no choice. And I think this guy he's got a good skill set. I mean, obviously they took him for a reason. To me, he's got the biggest upside out of any of these receivers, just because of the need that they have for him as a playoff caliber team with an MVP quarterback with no other viable receiving options. Is he going to be the best? I don't know, but by far and away, in my opinion, he has the highest upside out of any receiver we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, based on what you said alone, the biggest question mark I'm going to have is, does Rodgers continue the trend of finding one guy, or is he going to have one guy in every game? And I think that's the biggest problem I have with drafting Watson too highly is, yes, you could certainly have those 20-point home run games like MVS had, but he could just as easily pick Alan Lazard or Sammy Watkins to have that guy with, and you're left with a one catch for 14-yard performance occasionally. So there's a lot of boom and bust here, and that's ultimately my biggest fear. So where would you be comfortable drafting him? Is this a first-round target for you based on ceiling, or is the floor enough to scare you away into the second round?
The floor is definitely enough to scare me away. While I just kind of gushed about the ceiling, the floor is the dirt. So
yes,
he would be a mid to late second guy that if he was still sitting there, I would jump on him. I would have a tough time even really pulling the trigger early in the second, depending on how the draft shakes out, just because that I agree. I think there are going to definitely be weeks, let alone the fact that he's a rookie, where he's just going to be non-existent. But those home run games that I do think can and will happen are going to be huge, but how many are there going to be?
I don't know. And it's hard to chase those games. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, lost my train of thought. So I'm just going to keep moving. Ultimately Christian Watson is definitely, that's where I was going. Front end of the first round, obviously if you're picking there, you're probably a team that needs guys who can contribute, or at least if you're looking long term, you know, if you're projected to struggle again, definitely could be a project, I guess. If you're expecting to contend this year, I would question that. Ultimately, I think I could see this as early as the back half of a first round. If you're in a 12 team, you're picking 11 or 12, I could absolutely see this as an opportunity where you're pretty stocked, and if you're looking for an upside play or a guy who has the opportunity to be that next wide receiver one, I could see him going there, if only based on the potential alone. But I agree with you. Ultimately, I think probably early in the second is as comfortable as I would feel. But of course, I'm not working with too many contending rosters these days.
That's good for you.
Yeah, it keeps me in my place. Okay, moving onwards, we have another Ohio State wide receiver in Chris Olave. New Orleans trades up to take him. What do you make out of this with Jameis back in the helm for the Saints?
Big arm, big problems. I think this is another guy just from a physical ability standpoint. As a football player, there's definite upside, and probably a little bit more upside than some of the other guys in this draft. But with upside comes a floor, right? That's why you have upside. So the fact that Jameis is who he is, and also the fact that, as far as we know, Thomas is going to come back and is without question the alpha of that receiving core, and is going to get, you know, if all goes back to normal, 130 plus targets. It's tough to get too excited about an offense that largely supports two players, and that's it with Kamara and Thomas. So while I think Olave's got value down the road potentially and upside, this is a guy that I would probably fade pretty hard. Maybe even in the early third round, just out of fear. He's really not going to get much work.
Yeah, I think the fear is real. Ultimately, for me, I think there's enough question marks about Michael Thomas. We've seen him miss a ton of time. And even when he was on the field in the last couple of years, be fairly inconsistent. I mean, we've also seen Michael Thomas put up the highest wide receiver production in a season before Cooper Kupp last year. So there's a possibility that could return. But as Thomas is knocking on the door for age 30, I just wonder if that time has come and gone. And I think Olave, especially if Thomas misses any amount of time again this year, could definitely have more upside. And with the lack of options there and nobody other than Jarvis Landry, I think, obviously, we talked about Aaron Rodgers' tendencies, but Jameis Winston is nowhere near that level of quarterback, and he's not afraid to force it into a wide receiver, regardless of, you know, ability to get open. So I think Olave, with his ability to get open, I think has the upside to get a lot of looks this year. And I think I'm going to put him a little bit higher than Christian Watson, if only for that reason. I think there's a ton of upside for targets. Definitely no clear tight end, no clear wide receivers in the pecking order beyond Jarvis Landry, where he's going to see a ton of time. And if they can't continuously run the ball like I think they'd like, there's enough teams in the league that can get in a shootout with them where they're going to be moving the ball in the air too. So I think there's upside here with Olave, and I would probably end up with him in the similar range to Watson, probably early second round.
Okay.
Sounds like I'm a little bit more bullish on him than you.
You are. That team just kind of scares me in general. I tend to try to avoid Saints players generally, especially I bought in on Thomas last year, and it, like a lot of people, and it kind of bit me in the ass. So,
well, we're going to keep on going with some of these boomer bust guys because that's about all that's left at this point, I think. Moving on, there's definitely a better quarterback here, but more mouths to feed. We're moving on to Sky Moore from Boise State, winding up in Kansas City. Can he be a new target for Patrick Mahomes this year?
I think he can. He's a really good yard after catch receiver. He has a clear aversion to getting tackled, as he was tops in college last year, 4 missed tackles. I think with Juju and Kelsey, kind of like the tone I've set with other guys we've talked about, taking pressure off of him, that gives him an opportunity to get passes without too much coverage and too much attention. You know, this is a very good football team that used, that's a high pick on him. I don't see a way where when you are spending high draft picks on skill position players that you don't have a plan to get them on the field with impact. I'm much more bullish on him than MVS or Hardman, as I discussed yesterday. I just, neither of them do much for me at all. Like, obviously they're much more athletic people than me, but they just on a football team, I'm like, fine. I think this is another guy with upside, and, you know, is he a guy that I'm going to slot in and be like, yeah, this is the heir apparent to Tyreek, or is this going to be a guy that's going to get 100 targets? No, but potentially if he takes off this year, I really like the chances of what he could do on that team.
So the presence of Josh Gordon doesn't scare you?
Who is that again?
Yeah, ultimately I think you're right, and what I see happening more than anything else is they're going to use Juju and one other wide receiver to try and recreate Tyreek Hill in the aggregate. So they're going to try and take two of these guys and match his production and see if that's good enough. I don't think any of these guys, without a doubt, is good enough to replace Tyreek Hill on their own. I mean, that guy does more on a football field than I could dream of doing. But trying to recreate him with two wide receivers, I think, is very doable, especially for a quarterback as good as Mahomes is. So the question is it more, or do they let Hardman and Valdes-Scantling see more time early on? And that's really what it comes down to, I think. If Moore shows enough in preseason where he's on the field early, that's going to say a lot to me, versus if it's Hardman or Valdes-Scantling across Juju, that's going to make me question what the upside is for this year. And it's not to say he can't work his way on the field, but I think what he does early in establishing a rapport with Mahomes will say a lot.
Yeah. That'd be exciting to watch.
Is this a guy that you would feel comfortable drafting ahead of some of the other guys we talked about? I know there's a lot of question marks in this range, either due to playing time or weapons around them. How do you feel about Sky Moore in comparison to a Watson or an Olave?
Yeah, even though you made a pretty solid case for Olave, I would take Sky Moore over him personally.
The upside's greater.
What's that?
The upside is exponentially higher than Olave's.
Definitely. I view him and Watson fairly similar. The only reason I might give a slight nod to Watson is just because of, like I was saying before, just that absolute necessity for someone to produce as a receiver. But like you said, I really like the angle that you took there, where there's going to be two receivers kind of looking to recreate what they had. And Sky Moore has every bit of that potential to do that. So his floor thereby would be higher than Watson's. So I could definitely make a case to take Moore above either one of those two.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've already talked about wide receivers with a little bit of an injury history, and we're going to continue that trend with none other than Mr. George Pickens, also from the University of Georgia. A little bit of an interesting tidbit here, as the Pittsburgh Steelers continue to jettison wide receivers, looks like we're also coming up on the end of contracts for Deontay Johnson and Chase Claypool. And we've seen Pittsburgh be unwilling to pay wide receivers in the second contract and continue rolling out rookies. So does that mean more for George Pickens and Calvin Austin when Deontay Johnson and Claypool are potentially unsigned? What do you think about that?
I definitely think it does. It's hard not to look at this franchise and just want to have a piece of almost every receiver that they grab, because I know from personal experience in dynasty drafts, I've watched both Claypool and Johnson go mid to late third round. A lot of times they've got guys that just aren't highly touted, and then they turn them into who they become. So anytime Pittsburgh is interested enough in a guy, it piques my curiosity. And if Deontay is truly gone, is this year the year for George Pickens? I don't know, with a lot of mouths to feed, but I think he could compete with Claypool maybe as that number two. But if one or both of them are gone, I definitely think he could be quite the asset to own.
Yeah, I think ultimately for me, the longer term upside is higher than the immediate dividends you're going to get.
Yes.
Obviously, with a rookie quarterback who's working with a Deontay Johnson, a Chase Claypool, and a Pat Freiermuth, there's going to be enough mouths to feed where I think obviously he's the clear cut number three wide receiver on the team. But beyond that, I don't know what kind of a viable role you're going to get out of that from fantasy in a week to week basis this year. Longer term, definitely with some of the contract issues and Pittsburgh's tendency to tend to move on from guys after the first contract, I think there's clearly an upside to playing time. And if we can see Kenny Pickett at least work with this offensive line and be able to move the ball, I think that says a lot for his future value if he can evolve into the role that these guys have. Obviously, we see Johnson as a PPR monster and Claypool be no slouch either. So there's a ton of upside here. I just wouldn't expect it in year one out of George Pickens.
Nope. And that's exactly how I have it. I don't think this is the year for him, but if you get him in the right spot, I think he could be quite the asset in a year's time.
And the last two guys we're going to talk about are definitely more of dart throws, but definitely had some pick capital behind their name. Jahan Dotson for the Washington. What are they, the Commodores now, the Admirals? What do we call these guys?
I think they're the Guardians or something.
Yeah, we'll get there. Even the football team.
Yes.
Dotson. Obviously, they have Scary Terry, Curtis Samuel, De'Ami Brown, who they also put some pick capital into last year. What do you make out of this situation? Is this something you're interested in at all?
I'm not overly interested. At the same time, Curtis Samuel doesn't do a lot for me. Obviously, Terry is the guy, but there's contract issues there. This to this point in his career has been a volume receiver. So with that potential, you know, if spending the pick that they did on him, I like his floor, but I certainly the ceiling is capped right now.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, obviously with Samuel and McLaurin in place, I think he's pretty clear cut the number three wide receiver there.
Yeah.
They did spend a decent draft capital to get him, and we've seen him be pretty good with the wheels with a 4.43 40 and being able to haul in 90% of his catchable targets last year. So I think there's potential there, but ultimately I think we've seen with a lot of guys, like, I mean, De'Ami Brown was a very similar wide receiver last year that they drafted with similar draft capital. So there's upside here, and obviously any guy can become the flavor of the week. Obviously with a new quarterback, there's room to be established in the pecking order. I'm just very wary about a player like this, and as a shorter guy, what's his downfield presence going to be if he's not a true burner a la Deshaun Jackson? So there's enough question marks here where I think he ultimately falls a little bit later in drafts. Where do you take a guy like this if you're taking a dart throw or a flyer?
Yeah, I mean, certainly nothing higher than mid to late third, probably more of a fourth.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, ultimately, with the pecking order and the kind of offense that Washington likes to employ, there's certainly room here. I don't know if he can pass Samuel or McLaurin in year one, though. And as a guy who's looking to make a rebound himself, I don't know if Wentz is going to take that into the hands of a rookie to try and turn his career around, I don't think.
Correct.
And the last dart throw we've got, we're going back to Cleveland. We talked a lot about them yesterday. Mr. David Bell, do you think he can carve out a role with Deshaun Watson or Baker Mayfield behind Amari Cooper and Donovan Peoples-Jones? Is this something you're investing in?
If it's Baker Mayfield, no, thank you. I'm going to have to pass. If it's Deshaun Watson, I would say, yes, please. I've got a fever and the only cure is more Bell. The quarterback makes all the difference in the world to me with that. If Watson's the guy, I'm curious. I'd kick tires on that. But if Baker's done it, we talked yesterday, Baker's ability to tank the value of both Landry and Hooper and OBJ, which I think Hooper is actually going to bounce back, like you had mentioned. I think he'll be an interesting piece this year, but Baker's torpedoed any high value for any receiver. So if Watson's in, very interested, but if not, I'll pass.
Yeah, I mean, longer term, you know, obviously Baker could be only a solution for this year. Yep. Bell being as young as he is, I think there's plenty of room to grow into a role. And DPJ didn't do enough last year where I see him firmly cemented in that wide receiver two role. So there's enough there where I could be willing to roll the dice a little bit more over a Jahan Dotson. Definitely a little bit better of a pass catcher than some of the other guys on the team where he could carve out a role. I worry a little bit about that 4.65 40 speed. That's nothing I'm loving, but he was very productive at Purdue, who went against some very good defenses where I could see this absolutely being chalked up to a case of combine doesn't say everything. And he's definitely a guy I would look to roll the dice on over somebody like a Jahan Dotson, even if Dotson is a little bit of a flashier player.
Yep.
Well, let's round this out. We've got two players left to talk about. We'll turn to the tight end position. Trey McBride out of Colorado State was absolutely the most hyped tight end coming into this year's draft, and he winds up in Arizona playing behind Zach Ertz. What do you make out of this?
Well, being the most hyped in a draft and being hyped are two different things. And while he may have been the most hyped in this draft, I struggle to put him in the top 20. in dynasty tight ends, and that's as a rookie. With him behind Ertz right now, and Ertz certainly looking like he's got a couple of years left, I have he does nothing for me in the near future, just because I don't see any consistent playing time. Kyler being Kyler right now, who knows if he'll be in Arizona this season, depending on what pans out there. But no real interest in McBride right now.
Yeah, I mean, this is arguably one of the toughest landing spots you could go to. I mean, Ertz just locked up a 3-year, $30 million deal, so clearly Arizona sees him as the guy. And they already had Max Williams on the roster, and now they add McBride. I just wonder what kind of playing time he's going to see. I mean, with the number of options at wide receiver we've talked about at length that Arizona has, what path to playing time do you have if you're trotting out, you know, spread formations every time? Outside of goal line looks, I just don't see a ton of targets here. So no. Definitely not a lot to love this year. And I don't know what the future holds, but if Ertz is locked into a 3-year deal, you're hoping for injury here, and definitely tanks his value, I think, to certainly outside the top two rounds. And you're taking a flyer if you're taking him in round three, I think.
Definitely.
And the last guy to cover is a guy that's received a lot of hype based on his landing spot, Mr. Jelani Woods, winding up in Indy. What kind of stock are you taking in this situation when they've got Mo Alie-Cox, who hasn't necessarily lit the world on fire at the position, and Matt Ryan is noted for liking his tight ends?
Yeah, say no more. It's a crowded tight end room, but I could see an argument for him being the best one in the room already. And Matt Ryan has definitely supported some good tight ends. He supported Pitts last year with no offense to support. He, you know, had throughout his career made Hooper a viable fantasy asset. Tony Gonzalez, you know, all of that. So very interested in comparison to McBride as far as Jelani Woods. I definitely would rather throw a dart there right now if I really needed a tight end. But, you know, with myself sitting with Kyle Pitts, I guess the tight ends are beneath me right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is the biggest flyer, definitely a supreme specimen of an athlete. And it kind of reminds me of Brevin Jordan for the Houston Texans, as far as the skill set. I mean, it's a 6'7" guy, huge wingspan, 82 inches. I just read, absolutely huge size. The 4.6 140 makes it really interesting though. And he was one of the leaders on the Virginia Cavaliers with a over 10 average depth of target. So that's insane. Ultimately, the skills here and the you know, number of options in that tight end room, we've seen tight ends be notoriously slow developers. And with his age, I think it's definitely something where he's worth a stash. But the upside here alone, especially with Matt Ryan looking a little bit gray, career-wise, I think a younger option at quarterback could absolutely bring the best out of him. And I don't think it's Matt Ryan this year, but, you know, a year or two down the line, we could be talking about the next Dawson Knox, if you will. So I think the skill set is here, and, you know, the development will obviously play a big factor in that, but whoever that next quarterback is could absolutely have a huge weapon down the road.
Definitely. He definitely intrigues me.
Certainly more so than Trey McBride sitting behind Zach Ertz.
Yep.
All right. Well, why don't we round this out? It was a little bit longer of an episode than I planned on, but there was a lot of good conversation around a lot of good young players.
And you'll have that with your bigger jobs.
I have heard that. And certainly it's kind of surprising given the lack of talent here in this draft class, but obviously a lot of more conundrums based on landing spot than we've seen before. But certainly look forward to upcoming content about these rookies, breakout players we talked about today and yesterday, and many more articles coming from the Dynasty Locker Room team on the football front. Certainly tune in for the weekly baseball content, whether it be here on the podcast or on the dynastylockerroom.com. Jason, any last words before we round it out?
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. Well, as always, this is the Dynasty Locker Room Podcast Network. Swing by the Dynasty Locker Room. Feel free to peruse any of our articles While you're on the podcast, if you'd be so kind, subscribe, give us a comment, give us a rating. It's the best way that we can grow, and it's totally free to you if you would be so kind. Swing by the forum, chat with writers like Jason and myself, other fans like you. Give us some ideas for what kind of content you'd like to hear on the podcast, or chat with any of our other members. And absolutely stay tuned for more upcoming content. We've got a lot cooking here at the Dynasty Locker Room. So until next time.